Hey guys, welcome back to the Motherlode Show. I am, of course, Jackson Dunn, your host, here with you once again. Happy Valentine's Day to those of you who are enjoying love and special time with somebody that you love. Congratulations and the best to you. To those of you who aren't, who are maybe waiting for love or recently got out of a relationship, I feel you. Same with me. So, we're gonna go today into love. We're gonna talk a little bit about what true love really means and how we can find love and fulfillment sometimes outside of a relationship. And when we're outside of a relationship, how we can wait and work our way towards that place in which we can find love or maybe heal so that we can find love once again. It's all coming up here on the Motherlode Show. Stay tuned with me.
I don't stay out.
Well,
thank you.
No place to go. I'm home about eight, just me and my radio. In misbehaving, saving all my love for you.
Love is one of the main driving forces in our culture. This is, of course, because it's deeply ingrained in the human heart, and it has been for thousands and thousands of years. One of the first works, written works, that ever came out of human society was the Epic of Gilgamesh. I don't know if it was the first work ever written. There are many, obviously, very ancient writings which are very difficult to date. But the Epic of Gilgamesh was one of the first stories, origin stories about a hero, about a real leader, a ruler in human society. It's all about this man named Gilgamesh, who gets in trouble because of love. He starts out as a basically brutish caveman ruler, running around the world, taking whatever he wanted, and people who were more civilized than him made him the ruler of their city. And the way that they seduced him to get out of the cave and out of the woods, stop dragging his knuckles and building fires, was to seduce him. Seduce him into love with a local prostitute in the city that he was going to end up ruling for many, many years. This story is kind of interesting, and obviously it's very far-fetched. If you go back and you read the Epic of Gilgamesh, it's a classic mythological hero's tale complete with gods and travels to the afterlife and the underworld and evil villains. It's a really cool story, despite the rather archaic, maybe 5,000, 6,000-year-old language. But it's really cool because it just shows that we're the same people back then as we are today. We have the same driving forces. In the book, basically the two things that lead to Gilgamesh's downfall, because basically that book is all about it, how he rises to power and then he ends up falling both as a leader and just as a man in general, sees his frailty as a man. He first falls in love with this prostitute and it leads him into society and he becomes the leader. The second thing is that he tries to cheat death and he can't do it because he wants to sleep too much. In it, there's a Noahite figure. Noah, of course, from Noah's Ark, who put many animals into the ark, kept them from the great flood that came across the whole earth, and is credited for repopulating the earth. Basically, there's the same figure who has become a god in the Epic of Gilgamesh, and he makes a deal with Gilgamesh. If he can stay awake for a week, then he can have eternal life. Of course, he's unable to do it because he's a man, and eternal life is never, the secret is never found by men. But the Epic of Gilgamesh is really fun to read, just as far as understanding that people had the same motivations, the want to live forever and the want to find true love that we have today. And this sentiment was echoed throughout many, many ancient works and modern works. Actually, at the end of this broadcast, I'm going to read one of my favorite modern works about love. I wouldn't even say modern in the sense of like within the last 100 years, but modern certainly in comparison to Epic of Gilgamesh. It may actually be within the next 100 years. I will tell you all about that coming up a little bit later in the program. I decided I'm going to read it at the end, though, so that if you just want the content, you can have it. But the Song of Solomon is a book in the Bible that is very famous for its tropes on love. It's basically a love song that's sung back and forth between a king, believed to be Solomon, which hence the name of the book, and someone that he loves. The reason why this book is so special is because it uses a lot of euphemisms, uses words of love, and uses them as euphemisms for God and for also for the relationship between God and people, between a man and a woman. And it speaks a lot to love. But there's one verse that always confused me when I would read it, because it actually seems to go against the idea that we should all be looking for love. And it said this, it said, "Daughters of Jerusalem, I charge you, do not arouse or awaken love until it so desires." And this always was a bit confusing for me, because it comes in the middle of these long verses about, "You are my bride, my darling, my beautiful one." It's a love song. And then it says, "Don't arouse or awaken love until it desires." And I always thought, well, okay, I guess I get that. But what does that even mean? Don't awaken love until it desires. I mean, you're not in love until you're in love, if you know what I mean. While, of course, you have to work on a relationship, there is certainly a feeling, or you know when you're in love. There's a difference between when you're in love and when you're just trying to get into a relationship to get by. Most people know this. Most people can recognize the difference as well. So what does this verse even mean? And over the years, it took me a long time to learn exactly what it meant. And I kind of learned it over a failed relationship that I had a while back. So I'll tell you a little bit of the story. When I was just finishing up college, I had grown up very conservatively in that I hadn't been really allowed to date. For sure there would be no, you know, sexual stuff, but I hadn't been allowed to date until, the rule was in my family, I could make money enough to support a family. I was okay with that. You know, I grew up on a farm. The ethic and the lifestyle that we worked under was based on that you worked for what you had, that it was okay. Waiting for what you wanted until you could earn enough was fine. Now, of course, there was always some pressure that a relationship meant instant marriage, at least in the mind of me at 16, thinking, oh, I have to earn enough to be able to support a family if I want to date. That was kind of the onus that I grew up under. And for that reason, it was hard for me to find a date and also to be able to find a way to make relationships work in the modern day world. You know, I was raised, I could say I was born 50 years too late for the kind of way I was raised. Now that I'm a little older, I appreciate that, because I understand the wisdom of learning to be responsible before you go out and learn to follow your emotions and your feelings. Back then, I really didn't, and it was difficult for me. And for this reason, when I was about finished with college, I had only gone on a couple of dates at that point. You know, I was barely making any money. I didn't do well in the social world in general, because my priorities were very different than other people's. I hadn't grown up around a lot of my peers, and it weighed on me a little bit. I would see Valentine's days come and go, and people would fall in love, and people would break up, and people would get out of love, and I would see the dance in a little bit, and I would always want to be part of it. I wasn't really. I was on the outside. It was very difficult. Well, fast forward a month or two, and I was teaching English to a group of international students, and one of the students ended up being the first girl that I loved. And when I first met her and I realized that she liked me too, you know, your brain goes on fire when you feel that for the first time, and For me, it wasn't exactly the first time I had a crush or anything like that. But it was the first time that I realized that my feelings were reciprocated and that I could connect with somebody on a deeper level and on that intimate level that only comes in a relationship. You know, I found that finally, and it was really special. It was really special. And we had a great relationship. She was Mexican. She lived in Mexico City. I was from the United States, and we really had a great relationship at the beginning. I would go down there. I'd fly down there whenever I had breaks and could earn up enough money to buy a plane ticket. And we would spend a couple weeks. We'd go around the country. We visited a lot of different places. And of course, we were really in love. So that was special and it was awesome. But the relationship started breaking down. There started to become trust issues. Things in which I realized that I had been lied to. And also places where I really didn't know myself in this sphere of a relationship. You don't realize how selfish you are, how you like things the way you like them. You like your special spot on the couch. You like your movies at night. You like your little things. You have your little quirks. You like showering at a certain time of day when the other person wants to shower. And suddenly you have to start giving on little things that you wouldn't normally think about, right? And you start having fights on little things that you wouldn't normally think about. And I realized after a while, it was maybe 6 or 7 months into this relationship, that things were going really south. And for the next several months, I spent them trying to salvage what I had as an ideal for what our relationship should be. You know, that trusting, happy, kind of head over heels feeling that I had had at the beginning. I struggled in trying to pull that out, trying to make that the relationship. And yes, I was still very much in love. It wasn't that. It was just that the rift between us, the mental rift between us kept getting wider, and I really didn't know how to fix it. And finally, after about 6 months of attempting to fix it, I realized something. There wasn't enough reciprocation. And I'm not faulting her or me, necessarily. I'm sure there was fault on both sides. But I realized that there wasn't the trust that was needed for a real relationship, and so I had to end it. That was, of course, one of the worst things that I had to go through in my life, partially because I was very serious about relationships because of the way I'd been raised. I was serious about this person. I had invested a lot of time into this person, into being a friend, being there for somebody. And not only trying to have that feeling, not only trying to have that intimacy, but really sacrificing my way of life for another person. And it was a real, real difficult transition to realize that this is not going to work anymore. And I'm no longer responsible for the girl's happiness. I have to let her go. It was hard. But through that, and again, because I was a little bit older and I understood things in a different light, I could see that our love was never meant to arise. Going back to our verse, our love was never meant to arise in the way that I could have realized at the beginning when I was first interested in this girl, that there were things that wouldn't have worked. We had very different viewpoints on many things. There were trust issues between her and her parents that I didn't really think would be a big issue until I accidentally found myself in between fights between the parents and children in her family. And even when I wouldn't do something, and I should have realized that love wasn't intended to arise in this case, not because the feelings weren't there, not because we didn't have passion and certain secular ideas of chemistry we did. We really, really got along well in a vacuum, I should say. We got along very well. And we loved each other very much. But there wasn't the connection on spiritual things that there should have been. There wasn't a connection on what was valuable and important to us like there should have been. And more importantly, there wasn't the trust that there should have been. I was suspicious of a couple of friends of hers who I thought were playing for her. She was very pretty girl, and she always had a lot of guy friends around and didn't seem to really care, but I always felt that they were playing for her, and I was always super jealous because of it. On her part, she would because she lived in a culture, the Mexican culture, where people are a lot more forward in stating their intentions. Just as a general rule, people are a lot more forward, a lot more passionate. There's a reason that they kind of have that stereotype of Latin passion, and yes, it doesn't exist for everyone, but it was kind of part of the culture, which I realized when I went down there. But she always assumed that I would be that way when I saw some other woman, that I would be interested, that I was like, no, I'm not. But there was a lack of trust there. And, you know, little lies that were said in the middle of that ended up tearing us apart. And I realized our love wasn't meant to arise because I should have trusted my head a little bit on the things that I knew were red flags about our relationship. And suddenly this verse that I had read for many, many years as I had, you know, read through the Bible that said, don't awaken love until it desires, suddenly made sense to me. That love isn't only a feeling. It isn't only that passion inside. And don't get me wrong, that's part of it. But love is also something where you have to be able to share the deep connection. You have to be able to share your strength and know that you're going to get back what you need when you're weak. You have to know that someone's going to be there for you in those difficult times, in those hard times. Sometimes when you do wrong things, because you were going to do wrong things, you're going to do selfish things. That is what makes a relationship, is learning how to break your own habits, break your own mold, and incorporate someone else into your life. And if you can't find that formula, if you know at the beginning that formula isn't going to work, it's better to take a little bit of pain now. Break it off and move on. Because love is really special. And the person that you love may be the person that you stay with for your whole life. And that's what I hope for every one of you, that if you found that person, I hope you stay with them for either your or their whole life. I hope that if you're not in that, that you find that. Because when you find somebody who doesn't care about you as an object, who doesn't care about you just because you guys get along, but who really cares about you and is willing to make the sacrifices, the changes that are needed to continue living together and loving together, you find something that's so special, that's so amazing, that for thousands of years, literally thousands of years, people have been writing about, how can we find this? How can we make this part of our lives? All the way back to the Epic of Gilgamesh, they were talking about how love and the desire for life motivated this caveman, if you will. And the same is true today, that we have this desire to be motivated by love and to be motivated by another person, to get to another level that we have not gotten to in ourselves, because honestly, we don't contain enough strength within ourselves to be able to pull it out. But if we can find that, and sometimes it means that we have to give up what we want. It doesn't have to be an ideal thing. It doesn't even have to be that you guys agree on everything that you guys like. If you know, but if you find that person who is willing to give as much as you are to making a committed relationship and is willing to give up the freedom of being by themselves, who's willing to give up that everything that they have and give it to you. There's not a better way to say it than that. Just be willing to give anything because they think that you're more valuable than themselves. That's true love. And that's when love desires, and that's when you should make it work. That's when you should awaken it, as the verse says. Love is something that has continued to drive us for thousands of years. And when you find it perfect, when you find the real thing, you suddenly realize why it has been that elixir that people have been going to. It's not all about the sexual attraction, because that leaves. When you're 85, honestly, yeah, you might like the way that a woman looks, but your sex drive isn't there like when you were 20. Some people don't really even have that the same. But everyone is looking for love, and you see this when people are angry and upset and are wanting things, even from the government. When people are wanting things, they always want, what do they want? They want their life to be comfortable, and they want to find the happiness and joy, and usually within some type of relationship with other people. We're all looking for love. And when you find it, and then you allow it to arise at that time when you're willing to give everything for it, and the person you're with is willing to give everything for it, it's the best thing in the world. Which brings us to one of my favorite stories about love. And usually it's read as a Christmas story because it is about Christmas time. But it's a beautiful old story about two people who really love each other. It's The Gift of the Magi, O. Henry. And it begins. $1.87. That was all. She had put it aside 1 cent, and then another, and then another, in her careful buying of meat and other food. Della counted it 3 times. $1.87, and the next day would be Christmas. There was nothing to do but fall on the bed and cry, so Della did it. While the lady of the home is slowly growing quieter, we can look at the home. Furnished rooms at a cost of $8 a week. There is little more to say about it. In the hall below was a letterbox, too small to hold a letter. There was an electric bell, but it could not make a sound. Also, there was a name beside the door, Mr. James Dillingham Young. When the name was placed there, Mr. James Dillingham Young was being paid $30 a week. Now, when he was only being paid $20 a week, the name seemed too long and important. It should have perhaps been Mr. James D. Young. But when Mr. James Dillingham Young entered the furnished rooms, his name became very short indeed. Mrs. James Dillingham Young put her arms warmly about him and called him Jim. You have already met her. She is Della. Della finished her crying and cleaned the marks of it from her face. She stood by the window and looked out with no interest. Tomorrow would be Christmas Day, and she had only $1.87 with which to buy Jim a gift. She had put aside as much as she could for months, with this result. $20 a week is not much. Everything had cost more than she had expected. It always happened like that. Only $1.87 to buy a gift for Jim. Her Jim. She had had many happy hours planning something nice for him, something nearly good enough, something almost worth the honor of belonging to Jim. There was a looking glass between the two windows of the room. Perhaps you have seen the kind of looking glass that is placed in $8 furnished rooms. It was very narrow. A person could only see a little of himself at a time. However, if he was very thin and moved very quickly, he might be able to get a good view of himself. Della, being quite thin, had mastered this art. Suddenly, she turned from the window and stood before the glass. Her eyes were shining brightly, but her face had lost its color. Quickly, she pulled down her hair and let it fall to its complete length. The James, Dillingham, Youngs were very proud of two things which they owned. One was Jim's gold watch. It had once belonged to his father, and long ago, it had belonged to his father's father. The other thing was Della's hair. If a queen had lived in the rooms near theirs, Della would have washed and dried her hair where the queen could see it. Della knew her hair was more beautiful than any queen's jewels and gifts. If a king had lived in the same house with all his riches, Jim would have looked at his watch every time they met. Jim knew that no king had anything so valuable. So now Della's beautiful hair fell about her, shining like a falling stream of brown water. It reached below her knee. It almost made itself into a dress for her. And then she put it up on her head again, nervously and quickly. Once she stopped for a moment and stood still while a tear or two ran down her face. She put on her old brown coat. She put on her old brown hat. With the bright light still in her eyes, she moved quickly out the door and tore down the street. Where she stopped, the sign said, "Miss Sofroni, hair articles of all kinds." Up to the second floor, Della ran and stopped to get her breath. Miss Sofroni, large, too white, cold-eyed, looked at her. "Will you buy my hair?" asked Della.
"I buy hair," said Miss Sofroni. "Take your hat off and let me look at it."
Down fell the brown waterfall.
$20, said Miss Sofroni, lifting the hair to feel its weight.
"Give it to me, quick," said Della.
Oh, and the next 2 hours seemed to fly. She was going from one shop to another to find a gift for Jim. She found it at last. It had surely been made for Jim and no one else. There was no other like it in any of the shops, and she had looked in every shop in the city. It was a gold watch chain, very simply made. Its value was in its rich and pure material. Because it was so plain and simple, you knew that it was very valuable. All good things are like this. It was good enough for the watch. As soon as she saw it, she knew that Jim must have it. It was like him. Quietness and value. Jim and the chain both had quietness and value. She paid $21 for it, and she hurried home with the chain and 87 cents. With that chain on his watch, Jim could look at his watch and learn the time anywhere he might be. Though the watch was so fine, it had never had a fine chain. He sometimes took it out and looked at it, only when no one could see him do it. When Della arrived home, her mind quieted a little. She began to think more reasonably. She started to try to cover the sad marks of what she had done. Love and large-hearted giving, when added together, can leave deep marks. It is never easy to cover these marks, dear friends. Never easy. Within 40 minutes, her head looked a little better. With her short hair, she looked wonderfully like a schoolboy. She stood at the looking glass for a long time. "If Jim doesn't kill me," she said to herself, "before he looks at me a second time, he'll say I look like a girl who sings and dances for money. But what could I do? Oh, what could I do with $1.87? At 7, Jim's dinner was ready for him. Jim was never late. Della held the watch chain in her hand and sat near the door where he always entered. Then she heard his step in the hall and her face lost color for a moment. She often said little prayers quietly and about simple everyday things. And now she said, "Please, God, make him think I'm still pretty." The door opened and Jim stepped in. He looked very thin and he was not smiling. Poor fellow, he was only 22 and with a family to take care of. He needed a new coat and he had nothing to cover his cold hands. Jim stopped inside the door. He was as quiet as a hunting dog when it is near a bird. His eyes looked strangely at Della, and there was an expression in them that she could not understand. It filled her with fear. It was not anger, nor surprise, nor anything she had been ready for. He simply looked at her with that strange expression on his face. Della went to him. "Jim, dear," she cried, "don't look at me like that. I had my hair cut off and sold it. I couldn't live through Christmas without giving you a gift. My hair will grow again. You won't care, will you? My hair grows very fast. It's Christmas, Jim. Let's be happy. You don't know what a beautiful, nice gift I got for you." "You've cut off your hair?" Jim asked slowly. He seemed to labor to understand what had happened. He seemed not to feel sure. He knew.
"Cut it off and sold it," said Della. "Do you like me now? I'm me, Jim. I'm the same without my hair."
Jim looked around the room. "You say your hair is gone," he said.
"You don't have to look for it," said Della. It's sold, I tell you. And gone, too. "It's the night before Christmas, boy. Be good to me because I sold it for you. Maybe the hairs of my head could be counted," she said. "But no one could ever count my love for you. Shall we eat dinner, Jim?"
Jim put his arms around his Della. "For 10 seconds, let us look in another direction. $8 a week or $1 million a year? How different are they? Someone may give you an answer, but it will be wrong. The Magi brought valuable gifts. But that was not among them. My meaning will be explained soon." From inside the coat, Jim took something tied in paper.
"My hair grows so fast, Jim."
And then she jumped up and cried, "Oh, oh!" Jim had not seen his beautiful gift. She held it out to him in her open hand. The gold seemed to shine softly, as if with her warm and loving spirit.
"Isn't it perfect, Jim? I hunted all over town to find it. You'll have to look at your watch 100 times a day now. Give me your watch. I want to see how they look together."
Jim sat down and smiled. "Della," said he, let's put off our Christmas gifts and keep them a while. They're too nice to use now. I sold the watch to get the money to buy the combs. And now I think we should have our dinner. The Magi, as you know, were wise men, wonderfully wise men, who brought gifts to the newborn Christ child. They were the first ones to give Christmas gifts. Being wise, their gifts were doubtless wise ones. And here I have told you the story of two children who were not wise. Each sold the most valuable thing he owned in order to buy a gift for the other. But let me speak a last word to the wise of these days. Of all who give gifts, these two were the most wise. Of all who give and receive gifts, such as they are the most wise. Everywhere they are the wise ones. They are the Magi. Guys, I love that story, and I know it's a Christmas story, but I don't think there's a more fitting time to talk about the type of love that would give anything away for the person it loves than Valentine's Day. So happy Valentine's. The best to all of you. See you on Sunday.